You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right. And defensive coordinator for Oklahoma, Alex Grinch, going to be joining us in about 10 minutes here. Before we get to that, let's continue that conversation about Tre Brown, that competition at the corner spot. Now, Jake, when we were talking about the big kind of holes on defense, the weaknesses on defense, corner seemed the most obvious one. When you're looking at who has the best chance to compete for that starting spot, which two guys are you pitting right at the top there?
Well, the ones that you put at the top, to me, are DJ Reed and Akilah Witherspoon. Those are the two guys, in my opinion, it's their job to lose. Akilah Witherspoon, remember, he was their first corner that they signed in free agency, signed him to a one-year, $4 million deal. He is of the prototype size that the Seahawks like to have out there at the cornerback position. So when you look at him, you know, 6'2", 195 pounds, really long, lanky. He played a very, very, very good outside corner last year and really has had an up-and-down career, but 2020 was easily his best year as a pro, and they're hoping to capitalize on, you know, maybe him turning the corner in his professional career. He comes from the 49ers defense, which is exactly the same, you know, cover three scheme that the Seahawks run. So they're hoping a very easy transition there. But those are the two names that you ask me. I think it's their job to lose with Tre Brown getting the opportunity to come in and compete. Pierre Desir coming in and compete. And let's not forget Trey Flowers, who has been here for, you know, 4 years now, heading into his fourth year, who's had an up-and-down road here as well. So competition is going to be at its peak at the cornerback spot, Stacy. But I think with Tre Brown, what you're doing is you're hoping that he can come in and really compete and have great upside. But also, you're not putting so much pressure on him to be the guy from day one. You've got good signings, good players that you feel confident in, but you definitely want them to all compete and push each other to get the very best out of one another.
All right, for just about 10 minutes here, let's jump into some NFL headlines, let you know what's going on around the league. Bears head coach Matt Nagy had this to say about the possibility of Justin Fields being the starting quarterback in week one.
When you come in here, you do everything you can to be the best quarterback you can be, whether it's in the meeting room or whether it's in practice, and everything else will take care of itself. And all of those guys are going to do it. You know, we just got to decide then when we get to that point, how is he developing and how is everybody doing, and really keeping it as honest as possible with all of those guys. And then when the time is right, I promise you, every single person will know, including Justin, when it's the right time.
Now, Matt Nagy is just scratching and clawing to kind of keep his job with Chicago. So you're going to go with whatever works no matter what. That being said,
yes,
Justin Fields, one of the most intriguing picks for any team this year. And I think there is a good shot that he beats out Andy Dalton and is able to compete week one.
Yeah, I would have to imagine. Look, you trade up for, you know, trade up to get to the 11th pick in this draft, and for everybody in Chicago, everyone's feeling very, very good and very optimistic that they lucked into a amazing situation with Justin Fields. But this is a very different tune from when we originally heard with Ryan Pace. You remember the GM for the Chicago Bears, he immediately came out and said, look, we've had conversation with Andy Dalton. We have been upfront. He's our guy. That was the initial statement. And now you hear Matt Nagy saying something different. Look, this is going to be about competition. And this is the message that should have been out there day one is, look, we're not going to force Justin Fields out there on the field if he's not ready. We've got a great stopgap guy in Andy Dalton. But if Justin Fields shows up and he comes to work and he's ready for the challenge and he's ready to show come out there and lead our team and be the best guy out there at the position, then he should be the one that's starting. And I have zero doubt in my mind that Justin Fields is going to come out there and win that job. I just have a very hard time not seeing him be better than what Andy Dalton can be at this stage of his career.
Now, I love a glass half full person. I love an optimistic person because I'm not that person. So it's kind of refreshing to be around someone that chooses to see the bright side in things. That person apparently Packers GM Brian Gutekunst, because I don't know what Kool-Aid he's drinking, but he says the relationship with Aaron Rodgers has not been permanently damaged. And you know what? I love that for you, Brian.
Oh,
I love that kind of outlook.
Yeah, you keep that same energy while you know the house is burning down around you.
It's like that meme of the dog that's sitting with the coffee cup, and it's like, everything's fine.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. He's trying his best, poor guy, to try and keep things to seem like they are not a hot mess behind the scenes right now. And Gutekunst, I just think that, unfortunately, I don't think this is a guy that's in over his head. I think this is a guy that's not prepared to deal with Aaron Rodgers. And there are very few GMs in the NFL that are prepared to deal with Aaron Rodgers because he is a very difficult person to please. He's a very difficult person to gain the respect of. And so I think that when you look at what Brian Gutekunst, the situation that he's in, what else are you going to expect him to say? Yeah, things aren't good. Things are really bad, and my job is I might get fired because Aaron Rodgers has it out for me. I can't imagine anything else that he could say, but the Packers are in a really tough situation. And honestly, Stacey, at this stage, unless you are convinced that Aaron Rodgers is going to continue to play like an MVP for the next 3 years, it's probably time to move on. The moment that you made that pick for Jordan Love and the ceiling and the upside that you feel that he has, it's probably time to move on from Aaron Rodgers and to figure out a way after June 1st to deal him somewhere, because I just see this relationship. Once you start telling teammates that you don't want to be there, in which Aaron Rodgers did, that deteriorates everything around you. And I don't think that you can have a very successful relationship when things are that bad.
A couple notable fifth-round options decline, among them Seahawks running back Rashad Penny, Falcons tight end Hayden Hurst, and Patriots running back Sony Michel also likely to be declined there. Sony Michel, same draft class. Well, all of them clearly the same draft class, but Sony Michel taken, was it 1, 2, 3 picks after Penny around the same time?
It was
also another one of those guys that people would compare him to in addition to Chubb. Chubb clearly being the most successful of the three right now. We were talking earlier, and we can get into it later too, because I could talk about this endlessly. What the heck is wrong with the Seahawks first round picks? And I'm taking Jordan Brooks out of it. And to be fair, we'll take LJ Collier out too, just because he's still got a chance. Or you can leave him in, but we'll take Jordan Brooks out. He's had one year. 1 year.
I would still leave LJ Collier in there, and that to me was a situation where the Seahawks reached. Him and Rashad Penny are the two that I look at and say they reached in those situations. They knew that they had a specific need that they needed to go after, and reached at both of those players, LJ Collier specifically. But I think that when you're looking at the first round for the Seahawks, look, Warren Sharp put a tweet out there today saying how awful the Seahawks have been in the first round. I don't think you can say that when it comes to Bruce Irvin and James Carpenter, because both those guys had long extended careers in the league. Where it hasn't been successful is those guys, when you select somebody in the first round, it's not just having those guys be a part of your success for 4 to 5 years. It's about them being an extended part of your success, right? The next contract, getting signed to that second contract. And unfortunately, that has not been the case for the Seahawks with their recent first round picks, since 2012. And so I think overall, when you look at some of the criticism that they have had, they haven't necessarily been successful from that regard. And I'll be very curious to see what ends up happening with them in 2022, because I think the last 5 years has been littered with top-end picks where they've kind of gotten cute a little bit with some of the projections that they've had versus where good quality play is right here, right now.
Some broadcasting news. 2021 marks the final season of the Thursday night football package on Fox. This is interesting, Jake. We all knew that Amazon Prime was making a move towards having a Thursday night football package. That is going to happen 1 year earlier. So starting next year, Thursday night football moves to a digital-only format with Amazon Prime Video. How do you feel about this?
You know, The thing that I feel about it is it's DirecTV is going to be in a tough spot, right? Like, there's so many people that I know that since this transition has happened, Stacey, where they go, wait, DirecTV, they're not going to have NFL Sunday Ticket anymore. I'm getting rid of my package. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if DirecTV is like completely out of business to begin with. So with these announcements, but I do think that this is a cool new way that the NFL is continuing to look at their portfolio, continuing to try to evolve. So many people are moving to just straight streaming instead of having the traditional TV providers. And I'm one of them. We just stream everything.
Yeah, we do too.
With our Amazon Fire Stick and stuff. So I think the NFL is continuing to try and stay engaged with the times and trying to make sure that they maximize and not lose out on viewership and revenue. So hats off to them for finding new ways to reach their audience.
Now, I know that we aren't keeping as close tabs on every other team's draft class because obviously we've got to be looking at, you know, what the Seahawks are doing, maybe what some of the other NFC West teams are doing, but there is one team, it's in the NFC, it is not in the NFC West, that got the highest grade from NFL.com's Chad Reuter on his NFL draft teams. It is a team in the Southeast. Do you want to take any guesses?
The team in the Southeast?
Southeast NFC team received the only A-plus grade from Chad.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
No, it is the Atlanta Falcons receiving the only A-plus grade. A team that also took tight end Kyle Pitts with their first pick of the draft. Kyle Pitts, I think, captured the, I don't know, imagination, attention, excitement of so many draft analysts and experts that I think any team that landed Kyle was going to have people saying that was a heck of a choice.
Yeah, I think Kyle Pitts is an interesting decision there for Atlanta because it's also going into Matt Ryan. And do you believe that Matt Ryan has a couple good years? It's controversial for a lot of Atlanta fans just simply because, you know, people are wondering, hey, are you going to pick your quarterback of the future with a guy like Justin Fields, with a guy like, I think Justin Fields was the guy that they really, really wanted after Trey Lance ended up going. But you look at some of that and you're seeing Matt Ryan still at his high price tag. That was something people wanted to move on from. But if you believe that Matt Ryan still can play at a very high level over the next 2 to 3 years, you have a dynamic player in Kyle Pitts, one of the best players in this draft, hands down, continuing to match up with all the great skill position players that they have in Atlanta. That's a scary proposition.
All right. Very excited for our guest here. It is defensive coordinator at Oklahoma, Alex Grinch, on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He is going to help all of us understand a bit more about the newest Seahawk cornerback, Trey Brown. First of all, Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you all?
We're great. We're great. Trey obviously capturing a lot of people's attention here, not just because he's one of three picks, so it's easy for fans to kind of remember and track all these guys, but he's also going to join the most wide-open battle on the Seahawks team, on the Seahawks defense, by far. Got a real shot to be able to snag a starting spot. Now, I'll just start here. So he is a fast guy who received a ton of praise for his speed. He did get some knocks, I think, just in part because of his size as a smaller guy, also got some knocks for his ball skills. Now, I haven't noticed as much of that watching the limited, you know, tape that I have of Trey, but I know we're a little biased here. If you're scouting Trey for us, what would you tell us about his greatest strengths and then skills he'll probably work to sharpen at this level?
Well, you mentioned the first attribute, and speed is real, and it's not just in the 40-yard dash, which is a critical, obviously, evaluation tool, but he plays that speed. The film would kind of echo he has an ability to run with wideouts. He has the ability, you know, the makeup speed element of things, but more importantly, obviously, to put yourself in a position to be on top of wide receivers. So much of what we did here was put him in one-on-one, you know, single coverage situations, and so from an evaluation standpoint, you're going to see. You know, there's no hiding, you know, when you're out there on an island. So you're going to see you know, whatever flaws, and obviously the bulk of the film is going to, he's going to show very positive that way. Mm-hmm. But having that element of things to be able to run against elite wide receivers at our level, obviously it's got to correlate to the NFL offenses and what it would be tasked to do there at Seattle. Also a physical football player, the ability to put pads on people that sometimes when you get pegged a speed guy, it doesn't always come with the physical element of things, but you'll see that in coverage as well as in the run game. So I think those are two feathers in his cap. When you're talking about playing at that level, how fast can you mature from the standpoint of, the ball that might have an extra click in terms of your reaction time to be playable on it. You talk about ball skills that we may have at our level. It's not going to be there at yours. And so I think that's something certainly that all DBs have a transition to when they go to the NFL.
Now, Alex, what is some of the intangible things that Trey brings to the table? Because as I've kind of dived into him and get to learn more about him, and certainly we've got a chance to see it in spades in his interview, what kind of player is he? What kind of confidence level does he play with? And how did that affect your guys' defense as a whole?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is some big-time plays at one of the premier college football programs in the country. And so the stage is for our level, and obviously you always take a step back when you compare it to the NFL, but at our level of college football, you're talking about some of the biggest stages in our sport. And so to play in a rivalry game against Texas and then make an interception in the fourth overtime, someone had to make a play to win the game, and Trey Brown did. And then you fast forward a couple of weeks to a championship game in the Big 12 down in Dallas in Cowboy Stadium, and a 2-minute drive for an opponent. It's thumbs up or thumbs down for us, as a team. You're champions or you're not at the end of that drive, and Trey Brown makes a play to win the football game. And those two highlight, I guess, kind of what he's been for us, has a knack to be around the ball and a knack to show up in those big moments. And then, certainly there's going to be some tremendous championship moments for him in Seattle.
Alex, we also, one of the things that just stood out to me in this process is that the Seahawks defensively have really, been known for having bigger, longer corners. That's typically what they've gone after. That's their prototype since Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner. That's really what they've gone after. Now they pick Trey Brown, who doesn't fit that prototype. So you mentioned some of the big play ability, his speed, but is there anything else that you think that maybe the Seahawks, as they got to know Trey Brown, really study him, that, things that they could have fallen in love with to want to take him in the fourth round?
Yeah, I think, when you're talking about the short area quickness, so the ability to play on top of a receiver with elite quickness, and obviously we're talking about long speed when we talk about 40-yard dash time. The only advantage for a receiver is at the tail end of the route. So the advantage for a DB is at the front end. It's early in the down. So when you talk about size and less in terms of size specifically, although it has a tendency to correlate, but the ability to have the short area quickness combined with the long speed, your advantage as a defensive back goes way up early in the down, which can put you in a position to make some of those plays, like I mentioned, later in the down. And for a bigger guy, if you just check that box and say, well, he's big, he may not put himself in position to be successful late in the down because he doesn't possess the skill set, early in the down to be where he needs to be to, take advantage of that size, if that makes any sense. And so,
yeah,
I think everybody in defense land tried to, come up with that prototype. Obviously, you want them all big and fast, but there's a realization, especially what you're seeing with offenses at every level, but specifically the NFL, when you have to be able to play both the long speed guy that's going to try to blow the top off, and also those guys that are going to try to make you miss, and some of the intermediate passing game.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. We're speaking with Oklahoma defensive coordinator Alex Grinch. Alex, back in August, you had a really interesting interview. I really enjoyed it, but it was talking about Trey's transformation over the last year. At the time, it was from 2019 to 2020. And you said a year ago, he wasn't a leader by example. He had his good days and then was too willing to just have a bad day. And I think Trey would tell you the same thing. That's the kind of tough love that comes from a coach. But then you talked about how awesome it was to see him transform and see him change. What prompted that change, and what kind of person, what kind of Trey, I guess, did you see in 2020?
I mean, that's just a you know, sign of maturity. And you probably, you know, as a college football coach can you know, really use that same quote. You know, you can rehash that over and over again right. over the course of your entire roster each year. But, you know, specific to him, you know, when you're in a situation and the history of Oklahoma football is a lead, the recent history of Oklahoma defense is not. And so for him to find his way on the field, you know, early on is a credit to him. It can also be your biggest Achilles heel because, you know, to find your way at the top of the depth chart because you beat out 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other guys is one thing. It's another thing to say, well, you're the best. You just simply you're the best guy in the room, and you will be tomorrow, regardless of your performance today. And so much of that was, you know, just an inner want to say, well, the standard is not, can I find my way on the field, or be a starter? You know, can I have the internal motivation to say, you know, for instance, and we use this here, is you know, I want to be an NFL football player. That's the bar to which I'm going to, you know, judge myself and ultimately hold myself to. And so that was a major transformation for him, and that's a big deal, and not unique to him, but that is part of his story was, you know, saying that, not being content to say, well, no matter how I perform today, tomorrow's going to, you know, I'm still going to be with the one defense. You know, for some guys, that's a high bar if you're a young guy. But as you mature and as you grow, you know, the bar's got to go straight north from there. And so that's something that he did. Credit goes to him. And you know, I think his success and kind of, you know, where he finds himself today has everything to do with that.
Well, Alex, before we let you go, we really appreciate you coming on and you know, giving us a little bit more insight into Trey Brown. We were all excited to welcome him to the Seahawks family, but our text line is littered with Go Cougs. Everybody misses you. They love you, even though you know, you've moved on. You know, in Big Ten, Big 12, everybody's rooting you on, and everybody wants to send you a big Go Cougs.
Well, I tell you, I wasn't gonna hang up without saying it myself. So, you know, I had tremendous time in Pullman, Washington, and certainly enjoyed it there. So I would echo that. Go Cougs.
Glad we could pass that along. We're getting a lot of love
thank
on here
you.
For you, Alex. So passing along those well wishes. And also thank you from both me and Jake for joining us today to talk about Trey. He seems like a fascinating player, a fascinating kid. We were so excited to learn more about him, and I cannot think of a better person to talk to about him than you. So great stuff, and we appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you all.
All right, that is Oklahoma defensive coordinator Alex Grinch. I have a breaking news update here, Jake, on maybe one of the most controversial
really?
Seahawks draft picks I can think of. I'll tell you what that is right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, what I need to know coming your way in a little over 10 minutes here. So you can send those questions in now, 710-710 Mac and Jack's text line. Send in any question you want. Now, what we're going to be talking about, Jake, is one thing that you and I are excited about with each of these new Seahawks draft picks. Before I get to that, though, I have some breaking news for you. This is from about 5 minutes ago from a number of NFL sources, this one in particularly from Field Yates. The Browns have signed defensive tackle Malik McDowell, a 2017 second-round pick of the Seahawks out of Michigan State. As we know, McDowell has yet to play an NFL snap. He has been linked to a couple other teams, including the Dallas Cowboys, and the year since being drafted has yet to actually make a debut in the NFL, but officially signed right now, or not officially, reportedly signed right now by the Cleveland Browns.
It's unbelievable to me, honestly. I mean, We'll see if he can come out on the other end of this whole thing, but I'm shocked that Malik McDowell at this stage in time, he's getting another chance to play. But it goes to show that, hey, people can make fun of Malik McDowell and that pick by the Seattle Seahawks, but clearly this young man was talented enough to try for teams to give him repeated opportunities. This is the second time now he has been signed by a team outside of the Seahawks after they released him in 2017. So clearly other teams see him as a very talented player, but it's been a lot of the off-the-field issues and decisions that Malik McDowell that has made that have led to him not getting the opportunities in the NFL. So we'll see how this plays out, but very, very shocking news to see Malik McDowell getting signed by the Cleveland Browns.
All right, let's get to one thing we're excited about with each new Seahawks draft pick. Let's see. So we'll just go in order. Wide receiver Dwayne Haskins, cornerback Trey Brown, and then offensive tackle Stone Forsythe. So, Jake, I will let you do the honors here and get us started with one thing you are excited to see with Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins with Dwayne Eskridge.
Dwayne Haskins.
Too many names. I know. I was like, as I said it, I was okay. Like, what am I saying?
Dwayne Eskridge, our second round pick, 56 overall. The thing that I'm excited about Dwayne Eskridge is his ability to make this offense extremely dynamic, for him to be another true weapon for Russell Wilson and Shane Waldron in this offense. And I think that Dwayne Eskridge is a guy that, because of his ability to make things happen with the ball in his hands, you can find a way to get it in his hands in a variety of different ways. Fly sweeps, quick screens, deep down the field. He is going to stretch this defense out, you know, horizontally and vertically. Spit that out, Jake. And so he's going to make the run game better. He's going to make the passing game better. And that's the type of impact that I think Dwayne Eskridge has the ability to make. So that's one thing that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, I think I would say those plays behind the line of scrimmage, that idea of those quick little screens, jet sweeps, whatever they might be. I think I'm really excited to see how he'll be used. I am also personally, it feels harder now for NFL teams to have as good a return game, but I love a good return touchdown. I just do. And so I'm curious to see what he can bring to special teams in terms of his speed. They were also looking at him as a potential gunner. So it sounds like they're just thinking, like, this guy can do whatever he wants. And he is so incredibly explosive, and special teams, very underrated. I like seeing a lot of those moments. Keep those questions coming in, by the way, 710-710. There's lots of really, really good ones so far. So keep those coming. All right. Next player on here, cornerback Trey Brown. Now, we just spoke with Alex Grinch, defensive coordinator at Oklahoma, to learn more about Trey Brown. It seems basic, Jake. I'm most excited to see if he can start. This is the most wide open I can remember a position group being for the Seahawks. Both spots, both cornerback spots are open. First time I can remember that happening in a long time, because you went straight from Richard Sherman being your left corner to Shaquille Griffin being your left corner, 4-year starter for Griffin, right? And this is the first time they both have been up for grabs. I'm genuinely curious to know if he can do it.
It will be intriguing to see, and the aspect that I really like that Alex Grinch talked about was his ability to have both of the long speed and the quick short area quickness. And the reason why that's so important is because he's able to run and play with some of those burners down the field that you see in this league, but also the ability to read and react and to be able to do it explosively. And some of the things and some of the knock of the corners that we have had over the last 4 years, including Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers and whoever has played, is the fact that they have not gotten their hands on the ball enough. And Trey Brown has the ability to read, react, and have the special explosive ability to close on to the ball and to be able to break things up, to be able to generate interceptions. And so that's the thing that I'm really excited about that Trey Brown's going to bring to the table, is his ability to read, react, and use his speed and explosiveness to disrupt the timing of routes and to be able to get his hands on the football.
All right. And last player here, offensive tackle Stone Forsythe. Jake, You can go ahead and get us started here. One thing. You get one. Oof. One thing that you are most excited about.
Having an offensive lineman named Stone, that is something that I'm excited about. That is a tremendous offensive line name. I love that. But the thing that I love about Stone Forsythe is his size. I mean, he is so unique, 6'8", 6'9", incredibly long. And your job as a tackle is to make point A to point B, which is the quarterback, the longest route possible. And with that length, you inherently are able to do that in a way that most other tackles, most other players aren't able to do it. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that, because of that length, he's played in the SEC. He only gave up 2 sacks this past season. And so he has a great understanding of how to use that length. And I think that, as he said, his best trait is his size and his length. Now, can he build himself into that great all-around player, Stacey? That's going to be the big question. But his size is the thing that excites me the most.
I think I am most excited to see, and I don't know how else to explain this, Jake, I am most excited to see if he can prove that he is that kind of sleeper pick. I think so many draft experts that I was reading thought the steal for the Seahawks is Stone Forsythe. He was expected to go as early as the second round, and there was just such a difference in the evaluation that I think that's probably why he slipped. Some people had him in the second round, some people had him in the fifth round or later. And he got lots of knocks for his run blocking, which is probably what part of that was for. But I'm most curious to see if we, as people watching in training camp, as people watching, in the preseason or in the regular season when he does sub in, I'm most curious to see, do we see him prove people wrong in any low draft grades? Do we see him look like a steal? Because those players are some of the best stories in the NFL, right? Those players that are drafted
absolutely
in the fifth round, drafted in the sixth round, that come out and play like starters. And everyone loves those stories. So get your questions in for What I Need to Know right around the corner. 710-710. Any question you need, Mariners, Seahawks, non-sports, whatever it is, send it in now. We'll do that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Jake, first question, most important question from the 206, What I Need to Know, but they like abbreviated WIN. 2K. If Jake is under center in max protect, but the defense is showing cover zero and his only wideout is Stacy, what does he do?
There's Jake. Only two options available here.
Throw the deep
There's
ball.
Only two options available. No, it's either I'm going to take the sack. Okay. I'm going to take the sack in the situation.
So disrespectful.
We're just going to live to fight another day. What I would really do is I would call a timeout and chew out whoever sent out that personnel and make sure that we get the right personnel on the field.
Come on, man.
Because we can't be in that situation. No way.
Jake,
no way.
If someone gives you $100 and they say, bet this and you can triple it if you throw a football to Stacey 20 yards and she catches it, would you take that bet? 20 yards.
Is there anything? Is there anything that I lose? Like, do I?
No, you can walk away with 100, or you can walk away with 300. Hmm.
Yeah, I'll take that bet. I'll take that bet.
Really?
Yes, I'll take that bet for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It has more to do with my confidence to throw you a catchable, easy pass than it does anything else.
Okay.
But Stacey, I think you could do it. Yeah, for sure.
From the 360, What I Need to Know, pool, shuffleboard, or darts? Talk about accuracy, Jake.
I haven't played much shuffleboard, so I'm going to go with darts. Darts, to me, have you ever watched darts, like championship darts in Europe?
Mm-mm.
It looks amazing. Like, there are thousands of people there freaking out and reacting to darts, and it seems like one of the more fun, like one of the most fun events that you could ever attend, sporting events. So I'm gonna go with darts.
What I need to know, How pleased are you with the Mariners' month of April, given the fact that they had the toughest schedule in all of baseball? I think you can be pleased, depending on what your expectations are. If your expectations were this team is not touching the playoffs, like mine were, I was pleased with the month of April.
Why wouldn't you be pleased with the month of April, especially, you know, after a lot of the things that they've had to overcome? Injury to James Paxton, then they had the injury to Marco Gonzalez, and
right,
they've been kind of struggling to figure out their starting pitching rotation. It has not been a perfect month of April in the least, but it has been fun. It's been entertaining. I think that they have done an excellent job getting through this month, and as the texter puts out there, the toughest schedule in all of baseball. For them to be above 500 at this point, extremely impressive. Been a fun month to cover them, and I'm very excited to see what they can do through the rest of the year. As we talked about before, peaks and valleys, Stacy, peaks and valleys with the Mariners. You've got Ty France and Mitch Haniger. They've kind of come back to earth in terms of their hitting, but they're still finding ways to win. So I've been very pleased with the Mariners.
Learn to roll through the valleys. I mean, that's where the mall is. That's where all the shopping centers are in the valley. let's see. What I need to know, this is a good one. From the 541, do you think the surprising play and pickup of DJ Reed opened the door? Did it open the door to drafting smaller corners like Trey Brown? So basically, did DJ Reed play well enough to open the Seahawks' mind in terms of drafting Trey Brown?
Absolutely. I think that DJ Reed has absolutely shifted a little bit of the thought process of the Seattle Seahawks in terms of the way that they approach the position. I think it was a great, you know, snap to say, not snap back to reality, but just a great way of saying, look, there are great cornerback play all across the board. Height, size, it all doesn't matter. It's the intangibles that I think are that matter the most, and that's oftentimes what people miss through the draft process. And I do believe that over the years, the Seahawks have been looking to check off that physical trait list more so than they have looked at the entirety of the player over the years. And so I think that it's left them to miss out on prospects over the years, or it's left them with guys that they have really tried to get the most out of, and they've been developmental prospects like Trey Flowers, for example, a converted safety, but 6'3", long, very, very intriguing athlete. Mm-hmm. They got a great rookie year out of him, but hasn't been able to develop into that consistent corner. So I think that you're getting people that are masters of their positions. Trey Brown has played outside corner his entire life, his entire career, all the physical traits that I think jump off the page, but it's more so the intangibles that I really like with Trey Brown.
Speaking of the Cougs, we had Alex Grinch on earlier. Lots of love from Cougs fans. A Coug fan, I'm assuming, on the 509. Will I get to see Gardner Minshew's mullet ever again as a starting mullet and not a backup mullet? A good question from the 509.
Well, I think I will be rooting for Gardner Minshew to have a Ryan Fitzpatrick type of career.
Yeah.
That's what I envision Gardner Minshew
having. He's kind of like that. You know, like, he's someone that can be great for like three games. Like,
yes,
really fun.
Exactly. He can be electric. He can be a topic of conversation.
Yes.
You know, take over the headlines for the NFL for a few weeks and then drop off the face of the earth. I think Gardner Minshew brings that fun factor to the game, and I would love to see him continue to keep getting opportunities down the road. But he will be a perennial backup in the NFL, which, hey, you can make a great living as a backup in this league, you know, 10-plus year career. I think Gardner Minshew has that type of ability to do that, and we'll see how many more opportunities he gets to start in NFL action. But I do think that he'll get hit a few opportunities here and there.
All right, that'll do it for us today. I'm Stacey Ross. He's Jake Heaps. DJ Wilder on the board. We have some fun guests for you guys
DJ?
This week. We're going to keep the party going. It'll be a good one. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.